You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
This edition of It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, your partner for global wealth creation. Welcome to It's My Money, brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, South Africa's multi-award-winning boutique wealth manager. I've interviewed my next guest on many occasions about one subject about which he is passionate in both theory and practice, and his views have sometimes ruffled some feathers and meant he has become, in some quarters, a pariah. But undeterred, Magnus Haystack's latest article has doubled down on his offshore versus local views and includes data and personal recollections and political references that suggest to me that he's even more passionate about the subject, despite the JSE's recent startling performances. And when I say recent, I mean 2025. Magnus is a founder of Brenthurst Wealth and joins me now. Magnus, let's go back to March of 2026. You stood before a large audience at an investment conference. You'd said your bit, and then some chap put his hand up and asked you if you'd brought money back on behalf of your clients. What was your response to that question?
Well, yes, right, Lindsay. But I think the context is that, you know, I've been saying that for 15 years for various reasons, that the offshore markets represent far better value, diversity, and returns, greater returns at lower risk than the South African market. And I'm not going to go through all the reasons. But as it happens from time to time, and that scenario unfolded very well for our clients who did take our advice and externalized a lot of their money. Although they're all living in South Africa, I have a very, very few of my clients have emigrated, which is worth mentioning. But as it happens, and if you understand, like you do, the South African Stock Exchange, we are a commodity-producing country. And although the commodity industry has been badly affected by the policies of the ANC over many years, when commodities, and especially gold, goes on a tangent, which it did for most of 2024 up to end of March 2025, our market gallops along very, very nicely, and that's exactly what happened. Our market went up an astonishing 53%, driven by relatively few shares. In fact, five or six shares, mainly gold shares, platinum shares, and also Naspers Prosus. So the JSE as an index looked very good, up whatever, 50%. What I've been warning my clients, having been in the market for such a long time, I said, guys, watch out. I'm not rushing into this market. It's driven by gold, which is not influenced by South African events or South African politicians. And the gold had an extraordinary increase in value from literally $3,000 to, you know, well above $5,500. So obviously the gold shares rocketed 100-250%. So our JSE looked very, very good. But you strip out the performance of those gold shares and the rest of the market looked very mediocre and very pedestrian. And as I said in my article at the BizNews conference, and I was expecting this question,
yes,
I gave my talk, and someone, of course, he couldn't wait to push his hand up, and he said, well, Magnus, you've been wrong about the market. Are you bringing your money back? And I said, you know, that would be such an amateur mistake. Right at the peak, in my view, the gold shares were hopelessly overvalued. I would not bring a cent back. It would be irresponsible. In fact, that's exactly what happened. Since then, the JSE is down about 10-12%. And the rest of the world, emerging markets, USA, even the S&P 500, Dow Jones, you name it, it's just gone much higher. And in fact, earlier this week, we hit record levels all across the board. So you've got to understand, when you talk about markets, you have to understand what drives the market. So it was a very, very narrow factor driving our markets, and Alan Gray warned against it, and other fund managers as well. So the average investor will look at the past performance and say, well, that's where I want to put my money because it's gone up 53%, and that's where the amateur mistake comes in. So yes, since then, gold shares, gold price, Nospers even have come down very, very sharply. So we now we're lagging quite badly again. And the technology stuff is still doing nice despite the big pullback in the Magnificent Seven. But, you know, the UK market is doing well. Japan is still motoring along very, very nicely. That's been a very, very good exposure for our clients. So our clients are still up for the year about 10 to 15%. And they're very comfortable with it because it comes with much, much lower risk. So that's why I said you've got to understand what drives the market up. It's the same factors that will drive the market down.
Some people would say that the narrowness of the JSE has been mirrored by the narrowness in the NASDAQ or the S&P, not quite as pronounced, and that was because of a few AI stocks. But we'll come to that later. Also, a clever person like yourself will say, okay, well, if you have identified the drivers of the JSE in 2025, take those top six stocks out or top 10 stocks out of the equation and have a look at the rest. Don't they present value? Do they present value? Because reading your article, I think I know what the answer is going to be.
Well, absolutely. You know, yes, it's true that the Magnificent Seven have been driving the NASDAQ in particular the last 5 to 6 years. And that was also a fairly narrow market. But the Magnificent Seven, believe it or not, has not been doing well this year. The market's been driven by other shares that benefit from AI, like you know, things like energy stocks and the oil stocks did well. And, you know, the infrastructure, the so-called pick and shovels of the gold mining industry kind of stuff, that's been doing very, very nicely. And if you look at what, I mean, even SpaceX, you know, had a good listing, but the share price is down. Despite that, the indices are at record level. So there's other stuff. The market is currently much broader. And if you look at the forecast earnings of the S&P 500, for instance, you know, these clever guys can work out what the top 500 companies will earn going forward. And their forecasts have been very optimistic. And that shows that this recovery is starting to spread out of the high tech and the one or two high flyers. So the market is looking very, very good suddenly. Despite Trump's tariffs and the war in Iran or whatever, it's as if the war hasn't even happened. Gold, the oil price is down, markets are very strong, and as I said, you know, there's money to be made in many places. Japan, I was just looking at one of the funds we use in Japan. It's been giving our clients an average rate of return of 24%. In dollar terms. Now, that might just roll off the tongue, but that's an incredible, incredible wealth creation for any portfolio. You know, if it compounds at 24, even 20, your money doubles every 3 years. Now, that's astounding. So, once again, the whole issue is taking money out of a very small economy, contributing less than 0.5% of the world economy, and then spreading it across the world for your clients. And that's still the best advice. But our local fund managers do not like this advice. Their businesses are being affected. We spoke about it before.
Yes, we have.
They're not experiencing asset growth. So they're trying to look for someone to blame. And there's one or two fund managers who've been quite nasty, downright nasty. And I said, listen, guys, I don't work for you. I don't work for you. I work for my clients. And I don't care if you rant and rave and call me names. My clients are very, very happy with the diversification that we have created for their families. And
Magnus, you've done a fine job and you stick to your guns. And even though 2025, some people may say, oh, look, he's wrong. Finally, he's wrong. But that's a lot of nonsense. You're a long-term investor and that's the way it should be. But the bulk of my question was, if you take away the high flyers of 2025 on the JSE, there's the rest. Does the rest present value? And I think just to partly answer that question to you, is you give great examples of when you grew up in the 70s and then as a young adult in the early 80s about what had happened to certain of the neighborhoods in which you used to play. And you also talk about the ANC's policy and the anemic growth that we've had for 15, 16 years of around about 1% in South Africa, and the corruption and the crime, etc. Maybe you want to expand on that without being too anti-South Africa or seeming to be too anti-South Africa.
You know, I'm not anti-South Africa. You know, all my kids, I've got five kids, and all my grandkids, they're all in South Africa.
Yes.
And I'm extremely happy about that. We have a wonderful family. But their wealth, I have moved as much as I can legally offshore and built the structures because it just makes perfect sense. Because I want to protect myself from the ANC. Of course, my strategy, an ANC-proof investment strategy. And believe it or not, every second client I see, they love that. That's what they want for their families. And I also, on another show the other day, I used the example, and I said to people, I'm like a Catholic priest. When people come in and close the door, the confessions come out and they have a big distrust of the ANC government. They don't fully trust the government of national unity. And they simply say, is exactly what I told you now. They said, I don't want to immigrate. This is my home, my golf course, my friends, my family, my church. But I want to build a nest egg for my kids and grandkids. Take it offshore, build a nest egg, and off we go. And that's exactly what we've done. And as I said, these local fund managers who are battling to attract flows they're really flapping and they're really battling. But you know, I'm not the only advisor who's doing this. Every second advisor is doing it. And quite rightly so, because that's your job, is to give good advice to your clients. Nothing else.
I'm trying to winkle out of you an example, because to me, personal examples speak louder than normal words. That wasn't very eloquent of me, but you know what I mean. Tell me about when you grew up and tell me what has happened to those suburbs.
Let me give you one example of the difference in wealth for a family. 10 years ago, a family in Bloemfontein came to see me. They owned four big flats, blocks of flats in Bloemfontein. That was the family money. It's been there for 50, 60 years. And they came to me and said, listen, Magnus, we've been offered 60 million, 60 million for these buildings. Please analyze and give us a recommendation. So I did analyze the return, and I looked at the yields, and it was a declining picture over many years. Plus, I started seeing the deterioration of Bloemfontein and the municipalities. I started seeing that. I told them to take the money offshore, which they did. So they sold, got 60 million out of the country in 2015. That money is now worth 238 million rand.
9 years.
That's only half the story. That's only half the story. The buyer of their property came back to them about 3 months ago and said, guys, don't you want to buy back the building? And the guy phoned me and says, what do you think? I said, no, rubbish. Absolutely, don't touch it. But by the way, what does he want for those buildings? The answer is 30 million rand. Now you can work out the difference in wealth creation had they not taken my advice and they'd stuck with a property that was just losing value versus externalizing the value and building global wealth. Now, there's a prime example of how my advice has made a difference. Whereas other people have said, no, I'm all for you, South Africa, and I'm staying, and they become poor. Their wealth has been destroyed by the ANC. You must remember, I grew up in Hillbrow, 70s, 80s, and 90s. Those were magnificent blocks of flats and very large and wealthy families, mostly Jewish families, would own these blocks of flats. That would be their pension. That was a very popular, you know, craze in those days. Now, those assets, those balance sheets are zero. Those buildings are worth zero today. So that you multiply it by thousands of people whose properties have been downgraded to zero. And it's not only Hillbrow. It's Pretoria, it's Bloemfontein, it's Kimberley, it's Pietermaritzburg. So there's been a massive wealth destruction by the collapse of the municipalities and towns across the country. They are down to zero. I joke often that when you're driving to a small town in South Africa outside of the Western Cape, and you don't see a Pam Golding sign anymore, but you see a Finbond sign, you must know this town is dead because there's no trades, there's no transactions. And you can see in the stats, the property market in South Africa is half what it used to be in terms of turnover and number of sales. So the price itself is only telling you half the story. So, you know, and that's what many, many people are experiencing now. They're reaching 60 or 65 and they're trying to sell their property in, you know, traditional areas. And they can't sell them. They've not experienced capital appreciation for 15 to 20 years. I have one of them myself. I gave a house to my wife 20 years ago and it hasn't gone up in a cent in value.
I speak to somebody every week who lives in Johannesburg, and he talks to me about the potholes in the road. He's in an affluent area. How long it will be affluent, I don't know, given what you've just said. But he says he goes for a run, and there's potholes, and every week he gets a water outage or an electricity outage. And yet he stays because his family is there, and he's a proud South African, amongst other things. But the other thing that really got me when I was speaking to a fund manager a week or so ago was he said that, looking at the retail sector, and he said that Truworth's share of the South African retail market is less than that of a Chinese retailer called Temu. So it's been, Truworth has been shunted aside by something that is just a website providing cheaper, not better, I won't say better, but cheaper goods, and they serve a purpose. It tells you something, doesn't it?
It does indeed. You know, the SA economy is just running on fumes at the moment. If you look at the results and the share performance of Pick and Pay, of the Fashini Group, there's just been no growth for how many years, and you can counter that by reducing costs and reducing staff and reducing, but you can only do that up to a point, and at then there is just no growth. You look at the number of people on Discovery medical aid, that's declining, shrinking year after year after year. Well, there are two reasons. One is a lot of people are dying, but also just people are giving up on the medical aid. They say, I don't have the money. I simply don't have the money because it goes to everything else but medical aid. So the middle class crunch is now real, and you see it in so many indicators. And the last point I wish to make, when you speak to the local economists who work for the banks or the big asset managers, they are no doubt under very, very strict instructions. Do not tell the truth about South Africa. It's not good for business. So they try and, you know, circumvent it, and a lot of puffery going on and so on. But I saw in an Investec report last week that it was a report on fixed capital investments in the South African economy, which is now 13% of GDP, should be 25. There was a paragraph in there which said the following, that the residential and construction industry in 2025 shrank by 22%. Let me say that again, 22%. Did you ever read an article or a headline or a discussion about this? And it's just astonishing how that industry, which is a great employer, is just collapsing, but nobody talks about it. So I'm not very positive about the SA economy while the ANC is in power. You know, on a final note, the late R.W. Johnson, who passed away 10 days ago,
yes,
he always said, you can get an ANC in power, or you can get a modern, sophisticated, growing economy, but you can't get both.
On that note, Magnus, I was going to ask you to sum up what you've just said, but I think you've summed it up during the last 20 minutes or so. It's diversification. It's not diversification in a stock portfolio. It's diversification in a geographic stock portfolio. Thank you very much for your time, as always. Magnus Haystack is founder of Brenthurst Wealth, and that was It's My Money. It's My Money was brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, an award-winning boutique wealth management company.